This is Sarah Strudwick, and I have the pleasure of introducing my good friend and colleague, John Nuttin, who is coming all the way from Perth, Australia at the moment. John is a voice dialogue facilitator and one of the most influential people in my life, I'd like to say. So I'd like to hand you over to John, and he can tell you a little bit about his website and the work that he does.
Oh, thank you, Sarah. Good evening from Brisbane, Queensland. I know I've been in Perth sometimes when we've talked, but my home's in Brisbane, so in the wonderful sunny state of Queensland. I've been doing this work now for about 20 years, and I've got to be honest and say that before that, I didn't have the faintest idea about all these amazing things that are going on in the other part of me. I was a university lecturer, and I was very much into the rational, logical side. And then about 20 years ago, I suddenly started to discover there's a whole other world out there, the world of the inner child, the world of the negative core beliefs and the emotions, and just how much of our life they control us. So I became more fascinated, and the more I learned, the more I wanted to share that with other people. And that's why I have 6 websites. Well, because it's easier to put different topics up on different sites. But the main one that I think we're talking about this morning is corebeliefsbalance.com. Now, core beliefs balance with a hyphen in between each word. Core-beliefs with an S on the end, hyphen balance. .com. It's quite easy to find on the internet. And about 2 years ago, this lovely woman called Sarah over in England contacted me and said, I think I've got a negative core belief and I want to work on it. And that's where our friendship and our cooperation as colleagues began. And I'm very proud if I've been an influence in your life, Sarah, because in many ways you've been an influence in mine too.
I think I probably have in some ways.
There's been a lot of emails and a lot of phone calls. And of course, you've done the most amazing work with your own negative core beliefs, working with me over the phone and on Skype, as I do with people all around the world.
And as you know, as a result, I decided to become a facilitator as well. So, I mean, most of the work that I've done through my own book is based on the work that you do. So that leads me on to the first question. So I'd like you to explain what a negative core belief is and what's it like.
Okay, I'll try and keep this simple and not get into too much jargon, but deep down inside, we do hold beliefs about ourselves that are so deeply embedded in that they came from early childhood that we're not even aware of them. And almost every negative core belief that everyone holds, and I would say 80% of people have at least one or more of these beliefs that start out with the words, I am not good enough because. It's what follows after because that makes it unique, and there are actually hundreds of different becauses. Some of those becauses are, I'm not good enough because I am in danger or at risk, or some are, I'm unlovable, some of them, I am not strong enough, some of them, I am faulty or in some way incomplete, and so on. It's important for each person to find out what their own particular negative core belief is, because without knowing it, that will rule so much of their life and even who they choose as a partner and what they succeed in doing and where they fail. So here's this belief. We don't know what it is. We don't know it's there, but it's like it's carved in letters of stone somewhere deep down inside, and unconsciously, as I know in my case, for 56 years, I just went ahead and lived around a belief Can I share my belief with you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I am not good enough because I have no value. That may amaze people, but in fact, I was living a life as if that belief were true. And you can imagine the effect that was having on me and on the way people treated me.
No, absolutely. And interesting, we were talking about how we've had an effect on each other, and that was one of the things that I could spot in you, that you perhaps may have worked on but was still kind of obvious to me and perhaps not to yourself still. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Oh, it's still there, by the way. You can't get rid of negative core beliefs, but you can balance them, and that's why my website's called Core Beliefs Balance.
Yeah, well, the balancing I find interesting because, you know, I've trained in NLP since we've talked about this work, and the NLP model is almost like you can kind of miraculously make these beliefs go away, but I don't believe that, to be honest.
In fact, if you were somehow miraculously able to make it go away, you'd lose the balance, because the reality is that I live my life sitting between, on the one hand, some of the things I do have no value, some of the things I do have great value, but by sitting between them, I have a sense of balance and moderation. If I thought using NLP or some other technique I could get rid of the I have no value, then I would become literally a pain in the butt going around as if I was super valuable. And after a little while, people would start to ignore me, and I'd suddenly notice I had no value. And that's the amazing thing about the negative core belief. In trying to stop it, we can actually cause it to get stronger. The self-fulfilling prophecy, they call it.
Yeah, the self-fulfilling prophecy is an interesting one. So we'll talk about that a little bit later, because that was one of the questions that I wanted to ask you. Now, from your experience, because you've worked with lots of people for more than about 25 years, is that right?
Core belief work, yes, the last 15 years.
15 years, okay.
Before that, I was doing inner child work and not knowing about the fact that the core belief was right in there getting in the way.
Okay. Well, what I was going to ask you was, so from your experience of working with people, have you noticed that most of the problems, for example, where people have saying no, is it, for example, where they feel worthless or powerless, or does it differ from client to client? I mean, obviously, everyone's core beliefs are going to be different, but is there a pattern of particular core beliefs that pop up again and again?
Beliefs that cause people to find it difficult to say no.
Yes.
I would think probably most negative core beliefs would have that inherent effect on people, but the reasons would be different.
Uh-huh.
In other words, I wouldn't say no to people because I wanted them to value me. Someone else might find it difficult to say no because they felt unlovable. And a third person might say no because they thought that people would look down on them. Different reasons, but each time driven by the core belief.
And for example, if somebody felt powerless, they might put themselves in, for example, in my own case, have difficulty saying no because they thought, well, you know, I just can't say no, basically.
In fact, your case, and I'm glad you mentioned your own belief, because it's such a wonderful example of, here's Sarah, who, when she first started working with me, really did feel quite powerless, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I just
today you've published a book and you're becoming known internationally for your work, and you're a much more powerful person. But you did that work yourself. I don't want to take any of the credit for it, except for pointing you in the right direction and coaching you as you balanced your old belief.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I'm an absolute advocate of the negative core belief work, is because you know, nobody as a coach or as a therapist or as a counselor or as a healer can do the work for the client. The client has to do the work for themselves.
Absolutely. Self-awareness is important, but self-empowerment is what grows out of it.
Yeah, because you call yours growing awareness. That's another one of your websites, isn't it? Growing awareness.
Well, growingaware.com.au is my oldest site, yes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because I know some therapists think that, you know, they're actually doing it for the client, but they're not doing them any favours at all, you know, because the client will just slip back into bad habits again.
Or become almost permanently connected to the therapist, which is very good for the therapist's bank account.
No, absolutely. I'd agree with you.
It's not ethical.
No, absolutely not ethical. And it almost forms like a kind of codependent relationship with them.
Codependent, but one person's getting all the money and the other person's not getting the power.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you. You mentioned on your website that you don't work with clients, so I know the exact wording, but I remember reading somewhere that certain clients, for example, for narcissists, won't benefit from your work. I can't remember what you actually wrote, but from my own experience, I've worked with a few of these types of people. These are the types that I mentioned in my book. And I just wondered, what is your interest in this? So, for example, is it because they get worse, or why is it that they actually cannot get better with the negative core belief work?
Well, let's put this into perspective. I prefer not to call people narcissists as such, because we're talking about their behavior.
Yeah.
And they have a narcissistic personality disorder, which is their behavior.
Yeah.
The trouble with people who have narcissistic personality disorder is that they believe that there's absolutely nothing wrong with them, and everybody else around them are the people who are creating their problems. So, and I think there's that famous quote that psychiatrist who said that people with narcissistic personality disorder are responsible for 3/4 of our work. Not that they ever turn up, because they don't think they have any need to, but the people around them are all driven to seek psychotherapy as a result of the narcissist. So that's why they don't even turn up usually to see anybody. If they did, it would be to tell the therapist that they were perfectly okay and didn't need any help, but it was their partner or their son or daughter or someone else around them who should be seeing the therapist. So that's why I don't work with them.
Right. No, yeah, I've had the same experience. It's not me, it's them, and there's nothing I can do about it. They need to change their behavior. So no, I'm just interested in...
They're one of the most unfixable of all disorders. Sadly, it's sad, because they don't have a very happy life.
No, not at all. And
they make a lot of other people unhappy around them.
You just took the words out of my mouth. Okay, earlier on we talked about the self-fulfilling prophecy trap. Now, that is the one thing that's really I've had a big interest in. I've done it a few times myself, only recently. Not something that was too major, but perhaps you could explain how it works and give a few examples with perhaps people that you've worked with. Obviously, you know, feel free to change their names.
Right. Imagine, if you would, that every time you took an umbrella with you, it really did increase the chances of a thunderstorm. Then you've got some idea of what a self-fulfilling prophecy is like. In other words, I don't want something to happen. I do or say or act in a certain way intentionally to try and stop that thing happening. And the way people respond is to actually cause it to happen. So I guess prophecy isn't the most accurate word. That's just the general term for saying, when I try to stop something happening, I can take steps to try and stop it happening, and that actually causes it to happen. I think my own example, Sarah, is one that I can't go past. I was lecturing at a university here in Brisbane, and I had nearly 300 students in a very large auditorium. My earlier book, The Business of Communicating, had come out, and it would become an Australian bestseller almost immediately. And you would think that at that point I would feel that I had real value. So I go to my very, very first lecture in the semester, and there are nearly 300 students in the auditorium who are waiting to see this John Nutting. And I'd given that lecture so many times over the previous 15 years. I knew everything that I was going to say. I had a polished performance. So everything set for me to show myself as being a valuable person. And there are six students right up the back reading a newspaper and talking amongst themselves. Where did John, the lecturer, focus his attention? On the 294 who were interested, or the six who were treating him as if he had no value? And you know where I focused my attention, don't you? Now, what is the end result? The 294 people think this man is not as good a lecturer as we thought. He can be upset by six people who aren't interested, and he's trying to make them get interested instead of getting on with the lecture. You see how it works?
No, absolutely. I mean, there's numerous examples that I've done myself, and or as you know, I shared one recently with you. But so this whole self-fulfilling prophecy trap. So, for example, in my case, I think absolutely in my own book that was a self-fulfilling prophecy trap that I got myself into. When, after doing the work on, negative core for me, when does it eventually stop?
When it stops is the day that you notice it's not happening.
But at least you can spot it. You can spot it first, which is a good thing.
That's the first step, is to be able to say, oh, it just happened again, but at least now I know what's driving it. See, negative core beliefs cause us to seek reassurance from outside that the negative core belief isn't true. And there's a story on my website which is written as a detective story called The Case of the Stolen Self-Esteem, but it highlights just how much we all look to people outside to help make our negative core belief go away. And our professions, in fact, often are precisely what we do. So look at me, I have no value professionally, spent the last 50 years helping other people to value themselves. Take someone whose core belief is I am mentally defective, they become a psychiatrist. Doesn't make the core belief go away, but it certainly presents an image to the world where they will hope that the negative core belief won't be noticed. Another person with a belief I'm always wrong becomes a barrister, and so on. So professionally, we seek to compensate for or offset our belief. And that's actually one of the best clues we have when we're identifying beliefs, is to say, what do you do professionally? And there's about a 90% likelihood it'll turn out to be the opposite of the core belief.
No.
I'm not safe, and they'll become a fireman or a emergency worker.